Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts today, together with Kay Puttock.
Hello, Ursula, and hello, listener. Today, as usual on the first Friday of the month, we'll be hearing what's new in Ames from the city's public relations officer, Susan Gwiazda. We've also got two segments about food that we think will make your mouths water.
We both have to apologize. We know we sound exactly like how you may be sounding these days with spring fever, not in the good way.
Yeah, so if
we're coughing and hacking.
Right. Way. Hope we can restrain them during this show.
So bear with our pathetic voices.
Well, let's hear about an event that's coming up on Tuesday, April the 5th, the Transition Resource Fair. This fair is organized by Heartland Area Education Agency, and it aims to link families, teachers, and professionals who are supporting students in Boone and Story counties who have special needs to the communities, and it's helping to find community resources that can help support them. Uh-huh. I spoke to the event's organizer, Jamie Gerganus, who's the parent coordinator at Heartland. Now, this fair that's coming up, it's called the Transition Fair for transition age students who use your services. Now, why don't we talk about what this means, what transition age means?
It's part of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. The state, or actually more than just the state, nationally, it is mandated that transition planning is started by age 16, and Iowa starts at age 14. And as part of this,
That's good on Iowa. They start moving on this earlier.
Yes, they're very proactive. And what this means is that any child that has an individualized education plan or IEP in the school, which means they're in special education, they need at age 14 to start thinking about transition planning for when it's for post-secondary, for whenever they leave high school and they enter the world of living, learning, and working, as we call it. And part of this will mean that they will have transition goals on their IEP that they will work towards.
When they enter the world of living, earning, and working.
Living, learning, and working.
So it might be post-secondary education. It might be they just transition to independent living or learning to be more independent or something like that.
Correct.
Yeah. So there's a whole spectrum of what that might mean for the individual.
Correct. Yeah. Some of them will be going on to college. Some will go on to just some type of vocational program. Others might just need to find some type of employment, whether it's working with the Mainstream Enrichment and Learning Center here in Ames, which will be one of our vendors. The goal is to try to have the students become as independent as possible, and families sometimes we'll want them to move out of their homes and they need to find a supportive community living situation. So, but it all needs to start early.
So this fair is to link students to the community resources that are available to them. So the representatives of these various agencies and businesses, the staff of these communities, community services and agencies and businesses will be there at the fair to make people more aware of all the different services that are available. And you've given me a list here of the different agencies that will be there. And let's just talk about some of these.
Okay, sure.
Friendship Arc Homes, for example.
Friendship Arc Homes is one of the supported community living homes, and they provide different transition living houses that have staff in them. So you need to get on the waiting list for these homes.
Okay. And HERTA, which is a bus for disabled people that will pick them up at their homes and deliver them where they need to go.
Right.
Before we started recording, Jamie, you and I were talking about HERTA a little bit, and you mentioned that SciRide also has a program where they'll train people to ride SciRide so they can be a bit more independent perhaps of their parents or their caregivers or whatever. Would you like to talk a bit more about that?
Sure. Well, yes, SciRide has they will train individuals how to use the bus system and how to work with the drivers to know when to get off and just generally to make them more comfortable and willing to use SciRide. Now HRTA is part, it's the paratransit part of SciRide. So a lot of clients will use HRTA, but SciRide is also a good option, and it's not curb to curb. They have to get off at the bus stop. So
so it wouldn't be good if you're in a wheelchair, for example, but for other...
No, all of the SciRide buses are equipped with wheelchair.
Oh, they are.
Yes, they have wheelchair ramps and they're all accessible.
Okay, but you say it's not curb to curb. I'm showing my ignorance here because I'm not sure what...
Well, curb to curb means SciRide, you go and you get off at the designated SciRide bus stops. HRTA will drop you off, will pick you up at your home and drop you off directly at your destination. That's what curb
okay.
to curb.
Yeah, well, I think it's worth stressing that SciRide is wheelchair accessible and they'll help you with that. Because I didn't know that and it's not
sure.
obvious, just even if you've ridden the bus a few times.
And it's not just for wheelchairs because there are people that have trouble using steps that are ambulatory, but they just can't do steps. And so SciRide has the ramp that they can access.
Yeah, and talking of learning to ride the bus, I grew up in London and I was used to riding as quite a small child, riding the bus to school and home, at least some of the time. But if I went back to London now and tried to do that, I'd have to be retaught. I couldn't do it. There's a whole set of skills and, you know, where does this bus go and reading the sign and all sorts of things that have to be taught. So everyone needs to be taught this and we could all use some help with it if we're not used to it. That's for sure.
Yes.
What's Mosaic? I'm just looking down the list here of the different agencies that will be represented. Could you explain what Mosaic
sure.
is?
Mosaic is another agency that provides, they have housing and they also provide different activities for clients. And they mainly do more of the rural communities, so they'll handle Nevada and Colo and those types. They'll be outside of Ames.
So who would you recommend should come to this fair, this transitional fair?
Well, any family who has a child with a disability that is age 14 or older or close to that age, I think teachers, I think other agencies, any professionals who are working with people with disabilities will want to just become aware of what's out there. And it's a really neat way for families to be able to visit with just about all of the agencies in Story and Boone County that are that it will be here, and they it'll all be in the same room, and they can just visit with whomever they need to, and it's all just right there for in one evening.
And no charge, of course, to go.
There's no charge.
Presumably, a lot of people who come to this fair will have been to previous fairs, or they'll be pretty familiar with some of these services. Let's imagine someone who's never been before, who's listening today. What would you say to convince someone that's never been that they might like to come to this? What kind of person do you envision might be coming for the first time?
Sure. Well, there will be parents and maybe even teachers who have students who are just reaching the age of transition, who are just turning 14. And they, like I said before, it is a great way for families and teachers to learn about all of these agencies without having to go visit each agency individually. They will all be there in one room, and you can, within the 2-hour time frame, you can walk and talk to all of these agencies and gather information and have it. It's kind of one-stop shopping.
Yeah, and it'll teach you in a short time all the things that you might not be aware of that might be useful to you.
Yes.
Or your client or your child or your student or whatever it might be. Okay, so this is on April the 5th.
Yeah, it's Tuesday.
So Tuesday April 5th. April the 5th. And it will be at the Heartland Area Education Offices. I guess you call them offices, do you?
Yes. Yeah, it's the Heartland AEA office in Ames. It's on 511 South 17th Street. And it's in the Aspen Business Park.
Okay, so that's 511 South 17th Street. And which website should they look at?
Heartland website, which is heartlandaea.org. I think this is a really neat opportunity for families, and it's our second time that we've had this in Ames. So last year's fair was a big success. We had over 50 families come through over the course of the evening, and it just is a great opportunity for families.
So I didn't realize this was only the second one you've had. So this is a relatively new thing to have this resource fair.
It's a new for Ames, and I wanted to have one in my region. The parent coordinators have one every year in Johnston. It has agencies for all ability or all ages, not just transition aged, but I chose to hold mine for transition aged only.
So we've got you to thank for this whole thing.
Yes.
Oh, that's terrific. You cut me off at the end. This is Local Talk, and that was Jamie Gerganus, parent coordinator for Heartland Area Education Agency, talking about the Transition Resource Fair for transition age students with special needs. The fair will be on Tuesday, April the 5th, from 6:30 to 8:30. At 511 South 17th Street in Ames. And now for another event that many people in our community like to attend. This one's coming up a bit sooner. The International Food Fair will be taking place this Sunday at ISU's Memorial Union from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. This is an event that many people have learned to look forward to, a chance to sample a wide variety of different international cuisines. Iowa State Junior Fazira Nuran, a member of the Association of Malaysian Students at ISU, will be participating in Sunday's International Food Fair, and she spoke to Local Talk reporter Greta Anderson about the kind of food they'll be offering in the Malaysian booth.
We're going to cook two kinds of food, which, number one, we called it Murtabak Maggi. It's like a fusion ramen noodles with Malaysian taste, and also the second one would be a dessert. It's kind of like brownie, but it's more Malaysian.
Okay, so let's explore what this means to be Malaysian flavor. The noodles that you described, ramen noodles with what?
Ramen noodles with curry flavor, but Malaysian curry, which is not too spicy and not too heavy, and we add it with eggs, and then we will grill it like how we do pancakes, but it's a savory kind of thing, yeah.
Oh, noodle pancakes.
Yeah.
Okay, so a curry flavor that's light, and you add egg to it. Mm-hmm. Is it common to have vegetarian dishes in Malaysian cuisine?
Well, we would like to add meat, but we just do it anyway to save costs.
What are these pancakes usually served with?
It's not really like a pancake, but it's kind of like a roti. Roti is kind of bread. It's really hard to explain, but we like to have this thing called murtabak. Like in Ramadan, we will fast and then we'll eat after sunset.
So you're really hungry and you dig into some murtaba.
Yes. Yeah, you pronounce it correctly.
Do you have sauce with it?
Yeah, sometimes people eat it with sauce, but we don't think it's necessary to serve it with sauce because it's just good when you eat it by itself.
And then the brownies that you're going to make, what are they flavored like?
Okay, so we have this kind of chocolate milk. We call it Milo or Milo. It's actually an Australian brand, if I'm not mistaken. So this kind of brownies, it's not flour. It don't have any flour, but we use biscuits, a specific brand called Mary Biscuit. And then we'll just add it with Milo and a few cocoa, eggs, and sugar, and then just freeze it. We don't need to bake it.
Interesting. So is it cold when you eat it then?
No. It will become not gooey. How do I say? It become hard, so it's easy to eat.
Sort of fudgy, maybe?
Yes, fudgy, definitely. And the interesting thing about this is, you know, the the biscuit or the cookies, we will break it into pieces. So when we assemble it, you know, when we put it in the pan and when we freeze it, when we cut to serve, it will be like a, some sort of like a puzzle cake. So it looks nice.
Well, these are two dishes that I don't think I've ever eaten before.
Yeah, this is not really a traditional dishes. It's a fusion between modern and traditional dishes in Malaysia.
Yeah, I can see that you're using some prepared foods like ramen noodles and biscuits to convey the flavors of Malaysia. What is the traditional food of Malaysia?
Well, to be honest, some traditional Malaysian food, it's a mixture of different culture, like Chinese culture, Indian culture, and also Malay. So this Malay culture, sometimes it's also originally from the Indonesia. So we have a mix of everything, and we call it Malaysia.
So Malaysian culture and food is a fusion in and of itself.
Yeah. So our national breakfast in Malaysia is called nasi lemak. Nasi means rice and lemak means like coconut. So it's coconut rice. We love it. We serve it with fried anchovies, a sambal, which is like a chili paste, boiled eggs, cucumber, peanuts, and sometimes people like to eat it with fried chicken or any kind of meat that they like.
And that is your national breakfast.
Yes, although it is considered like very heavy because it is like based on coconut and a lot of frying. I read somewhere that even though it seems heavy, all these parts like the cucumber, the fried anchovies, the peanut provide a balanced meal and it is actually a healthy meal for every day.
Can you pronounce the name again?
Nasi lemak.
Nasi lemak, the Malaysian national breakfast. And as a Malaysian woman, what besides food, what do you take pride in your country?
Well, I am a kind of artistic person, so I take pride in our arts. For example, like performance arts, because I am into performing arts since I was young. So performing arts in Malaysia, it's different in the way like how we dance, how we sing. We have traditional musical instruments which are adapted from Arabic land, Middle Eastern, for example. 100 years ago, Malaysia originally called the Tanah Melayu, it's an entry port. So we receive people from China, from India, from Arab, from all around the world. And while they're doing business, they also share their culture and arts and artifacts, whatever seems valuable to them. And over the years, you adapted all these small aspects of every culture and we made it to what we call Malaysian culture. Yeah.
One more question. What's the difference between Malaysian cooking and Indonesian cooking?
Wow. I've read a few articles where the shift between these two countries are not say arguing but trying to claim which is originated from. So I can never actually tell which is Malaysian food or which is Indonesian food. So maybe you have to taste it yourself, I guess. Yeah. To be honest, I cannot differentiate between those two.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Fazira, for sharing your culture with us.
That was International Food Fair at Iowa State. So if you want to try to discern the difference between Malaysian and Indonesian cuisine or sample food from all over the world, the International Food Fair is this Sunday at the Memorial Union from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Fazira will be there along with others from the Association of Malaysian Students. Be sure to tell her that you heard about it from us on KHOI Community Radio. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And speaking of food, today also happens to be Edible Food Day, celebrated in the United States. And so it is an appropriate day to unveil a new collaborative project between the Ames Public Library, Iowa State University, and local Ames authors. Kay, you spoke with Lynn Carey yesterday, the director of the Ames Public Library. What did she tell you about this new project?
Well, she told me that it was edible. Today was Edible Book Day. She couldn't quite make it at this time herself, so I'll do the best I can with what she told me about edible books.
So I'm sure everybody's wondering, what is an edible book?
Well, it's just a book that can be eaten. If you Google edible books, you'll see various images, things like cakes shaped as books. And in fact, they've had edible book festivals at the library. But this being Ames, we wanted to take the idea a little bit further and develop some books that could be both read and eaten.
Some food for thought.
Yes, apparently people do say that a lot when they hear it.
I guess they get that a lot. Well, a lot of newspapers are printed with soy ink, so I suppose that's edible. What did she say they were going to use for pages? And I'm picturing something like fruit leather.
Well, I think she did mention rice paper for the pages.
Huh.
I can't quite remember this. Maybe the fruit leathers were for the covers of the books.
Huh.
But it's funny you should mention soy, because that's one of our two crops, of course, here in Iowa, the other being corn. And, of course, so here at Iowa State University, there are all kinds of researchers working on uses of corn beyond simple food.
I guess in this state we've gone from corn syrup to corn ethanol, and now there's corn-based packaging and the like?
Exactly. There are a lot of uses for corn, and some of them still involve eating.
Hmm.
So we've got collaborators in the ISU Food Science Department who are working on some corn fiber products that are remarkably like the wood fiber pages we're used to, and much easier to digest.
Corn fiber doesn't really...
Oh, I think Lynn's come. She's arrived.
Well, corn fiber doesn't really
It doesn't sound appetizing to me. I don't know what she'll have to say about that.
Hi, Lynn. Thank you for joining us. Kay has been explaining that she spoke to you yesterday about your new project, Edible Books, and thank you for joining Local Talk.
So happy to be here. Well, I'll back up a little bit and just explain sort of the genesis for this project.
Okay.
It does sound a little bit wacky, but, mm-hmm. you know, if you can't be a little bit wacky, then why exist?
Right,
so,
I guess.
several things kind of came together all at once. Of course, I think you know, if you've been around a child, that when you see a child, what they're doing is putting things in their mouths.
Mm-hmm.
And we notice, of course, that with board books at the library, that's the first thing that kids do. And I don't have kids, and I haven't gone through a lot of the developmental stages of watching children with books. But I found out that kids putting books in mouths when they're toddlers is actually an early literacy skill development. So we started uh-huh. looking into that. You know, it's something that they have a tactile experience with books, and it actually helps spark the literacy development parts of their brains.
Huh.
And so when we started thinking...
So we should let our children put books in their mouths chew on the covers?
Absolutely.
Hmm.
You should let them explore the printed page and books
in every
way possible. And so why should that stop with children?
Hmm.
And why wouldn't we want to look at ways to enhance that experience? Then about the same time I started thinking about this.
So, for instance, the book Blueberries for Sal.
Oh, yeah.
You're saying they should be able to taste blueberries as well as see them in the pictures
and
hear about them?
Wouldn't that enhance the experience? I mean, wouldn't that just make it so much fuller and richer for them? I just think.
So is an edible version of Blueberries for Sale going to be part of your collection?
I've heard of scratch and sniff books, but this is eat, scratch, sniff.
Yes,
the whole package.
Scratch, sniff, lick, taste, consume. I mean, I was in a book club many years ago, and one of my fellow members was an ISU professor, and her favorite way to describe a book that she really enjoyed was it was a gobble.
That's awesome. Excuse me.
The other thing that happened around the same time is I was reading Michael Pollan's book, The Omnivore's Dilemma, and there was a line in it that I'll probably mangle, but it really struck me being from a corn state, is that when you go in the grocery store, 40% of the products in a grocery store actually contain corn in some fashion. And I thought, how can that be when there's all this fresh produce and stuff? Well, there really isn't all this that much fresh produce, but corn is present in the inks, in the packaging, in all of that. So why not turn corn into books? It just seems like a natural, doesn't it?
Kay mentioned before you came that you were collaborating with Iowa State University on this. Is this where ISU comes in?
Yes. And we just started a new strategic plan at the library, and one of our main initiatives is to work more collaboratively with Iowa State. So we're doing things like intern programs and those sorts of things. But why not take advantage of the great scientific wealth there? This is a perfect kind of project for a graduate student to really dig into, to get their teeth into.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. It's too early for puns.
Well, now that you it really is kind of appropriate for this to happen in Ames, because we've been working so hard on literacy as well as technology, and we've got the corn. So will there be books for adults?
We would hope so. I mean, we'll start with kids. It's kind of a pilot project now, and then just see where it takes us. But I'm sure that I can tell on your faces right now that you're seeing all the possibilities in the same way that we are. It just looks like something that could grow and grow. And let's put Ames on the map.
You could make a recipe book where you could taste the recipe as well as read it.
Yeah, wouldn't that be exciting?
I don't see how you can have a collection because the books will all get eaten up.
Yeah, how does that work when you lend the books out? Would they get returned?
That's certainly something that we're grappling with right now. Mm-hmm. That is sort of the stopping point that has prevented us from just jumping in with this. So, we're kind of the literature side. The scientists can handle that side.
It sounds to me like the city council needs to handle that side.
Well, I'm sure they'll have an opinion once we have a proposal for them. It's in the early stages, and
you have to develop some sort of laws where people can only take a bite out of a book and not wolf down the whole book before they bring it back.
That will be another thing that we'll have to work out.
And there'll be hygiene issues involved, though. Like if there's different people biting great chunks out of these books, maybe we should get other agencies involved here.
I think
checking on the hygiene at the library.
That's something that we have talked with the people in the scientific community about, too, that is there a way to build in some sort of protection for people? We're hoping that they'll be able to introduce nutritional supplements into the books, too. Mm-hmm. So at the same time, could they be thinking about introducing some sort of antibacterial, something that would protect people? I mean, we certainly don't want to harm people with this. This is all about making the world better through edible materials.
Huh. So how is this project being funded?
We're looking for grants. This seems like the kind of thing, I mean, MacArthur grant kind of comes to mind. I mean, this is really innovative. This is out there.
So it's not coming out of tax dollars?
Oh, no, no. Uh-huh. Yeah. When we do something new and experimental, we try to find grants or a particular donor that would be interested in this. We don't mess around with tax dollars.
Uh-huh. So, Edible Book Day is coming right up.
It's today.
It's today. What do you have to show today? Do you have a book to show?
I was kind of hungry on the way over. I'm so sorry. I ate it.
So what are you going to do when people show up and want to try the edible book?
We'll do what we usually do. We'll plan a program and we'll have background and have things to show people. As I said, this is early stages, and when we're ready to introduce it to the public, we'll do it with a big splash. I'm hoping Well, I always want things sooner than possible, but I'm hoping that we have a full-blown collection and everybody understands this project by next Edible Book.
By next April 1st.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Today, if somebody comes in and wants to see the Edible Books, maybe what you should say is, April Fools.
We could say that because April Fools.
April Fools. Lynn, any other news from the library that you want to share before you
Real
go?
News.
Thank you for
Real
thank
news. Check out our website, www.amespubliclibrary.org. There's always a lot of real life stuff going on at the library. So we have a wide array of programs, and we'd love to see you there.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's Lynn Carey, director of the library. And please don't call up and complain to the library. This was not her idea. This was our idea.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Lynn. See you later. And this is Local Talk on KHOI, and we're glad to have Susan Guyasta back with us. Susan is a public relations officer for the City of Ames. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, great to be back.
Okay, so tell us what you have for us today. Susan always comes by and gives us a preview of what's happening in municipal life.
Yeah, well, as I was driving over here in the rain, I began thinking about some big things that are going on, just in general, sort of big picture things that are going to be happening. April really is the kickoff for construction. And I have to say, in my years in city government, one of the biggest issues, complaints that we get often has to do with street construction. Uh-huh. It's one of those things that you kind of have to put up with it. It always drags out longer than you think. And then everybody's always happy with the end result. But it's a long road. And we have several construction projects. I'm already starting to get notices about them. They will be starting in your area soon. And we just ask that people be patient. We try our best to notify neighbors when we're going to be in their area working. Sometimes things are more emergency. You might have a water main break and we have to just sort of show up. And your street may be temporarily closed. But most of our construction projects over the summer are scheduled events where we send out notification by email, by mail, by actual U.S. mail. And then we can keep in touch with people through traditional means like radio shows or the newspaper or on our website. We actually have some dedicated information on our website at cityofames.org/construction. And that is where you can go and get updates on projects, not just the one in your neighborhood, but projects all over the community. And then what's coming up ahead. So as I was driving here past the Furman Aquatic Center, that's going to be a big one coming up. And that will start very soon. 13th Street, near the Furman Aquatic Center, to the east of the Furman Aquatic Center, there will be a large construction project along that stretch of 13th Street where it involves, and I don't know if you can visualize that stretch.
The big hill.
We're going to cut the hill away and put a sidewalk on the north side. So if you are coming from Crescent or Ridgewood, sort of the high school area, and you want to get to the Furman Aquatic Center, there's never been a sidewalk along that part of
that's
it.
Right.
And it's not the best arrangement. Mm-hmm. We know that that center is a big draw for kids, and we're concerned about safety. Also, the street condition in that area is not good. So there's two things we're working on, street reconstruction and putting in that sidewalk. You mentioned the big hill. So you can see that that's not going to be a typical sidewalk project.
Right.
So there are going to be some lane closures. It will probably go down to what we call head-to-head lane closures.
All on one side?
It could be all on one side. It could be the two middle lanes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It just depends as they work on that project. So that one will start very soon. It will go all through the summer. And so you'll want to consider rerouting yourself, looking at different ways to get around town. That's a major east-west corridor. So
it's one of the fastest ways to get between the east and the west side. So it won't be that for the
during
the
summer. You just have to know that there will be a little bottleneck for a block or so, and then it'll open back up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, factor in a few extra minutes in your travels each day. And it shouldn't be a big deal. It's just that it seems to catch people off guard. And all construction projects are weather dependent. If we have a very wet, you know, construction season, we could see delays. And so we just ask for people's patience. We know that when the product is done, people love it. And
what kind of complaints do you get? You said you get complaints about these projects.
Typically, it's because it's taking longer. You know, I didn't think it would take this long. You could do this differently. We have tried actually to work the construction project with traffic going through, it tends to slow the project down and it tends to be a little dangerous for the workers. So it's more painful to completely close something and just let the work get done. But that tends to go faster. So we've tried experimenting with different ways to get construction projects to be convenient for residents, but safe for the workers and efficient and effective. And it's always a balancing act. So people get frustrated after a while. Often if it's in your neighborhood, you may not be able to park next mm-hmm. to your home. You may be inconvenienced where you're carrying your groceries a half block in. You may live on a major thoroughfare and people are rerouting for a long time. And then suddenly on their reroute, another construction project starts. So then they're detouring from a detour. It's just the nature of the business. And we just ask for people's patience. We understand it's a frustrating situation when they drag on. When it's wet, there's just things you can and cannot do. So
do you know what other projects are slated for this summer besides 13th Street?
Well, I know that those projects are on the construction updates. I have a list of very small residential projects we have going on. I know mm-hmm. Melrose Avenue, I just sent out information on that one. There's a stretch of Melrose that will close on Monday or it will be reduced. Mm-hmm. There may be some temporary closures. They're trying to work with traffic. There is 17th Street near, I think it's Douglas, that's going to start on Monday. Here's my Melrose one. A section of Melrose, 24th Street to Hunziker. That will start just this coming Monday. A couple others will be starting, and I'm going to get that information out as soon as I get back to work. So those, again, are always on our website, cityofames.org/construction. The other ones that are scheduled for throughout the summer, they're all on there too. I have not gone over them. There will be a lot of them. And here's another one to understand. Iowa State will be doing theirs as well. And mm-hmm. Iowa State has property sometimes where people don't think about their – when you think about all the roads that go through Iowa State, maybe you drive those roads to get from place to another, those may be under construction. So a lot is happening, and we try to coordinate with our other partners in the community. But – you probably will experience some detouring this summer, no matter where you live. So that's one thing I just like people to be aware of. We have some events coming up in April.
Okay.
Actually, it's the day before the Eco Fair. I hope everybody has that on their calendar. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow is our annual Eco Fair. It is from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the City Community Center Gym. That's in City Hall, 515 Clark. Mm-hmm. It's a great opportunity to get out and learn about sustainability, to learn about city rebates that we have for high efficiency appliances, air conditioners, to sign up for a free home energy audit, to learn about rain barrel rebates. I know we've talked about that mm-hmm. before. Always as I look at the rain outside,
yeah. Love our rain barrels.
Great opportunity to invest in a rain barrel.
Yeah.
So that information will be available tomorrow at the Eco Fair. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like we'll have the best weather, but hopefully people will still join us.
Eco Fair has kind of become a signature event for the City of Ames.
Yeah, it started out as just the electric department. It was called the Energy Fair, and Energy Fair and Eco Fair combined were at year 16, so it's been a long time. And I've kind of been I don't want this event to be overshadowed by the Eco Fair, but once the Eco Fair is over, we're really going to start talking a lot about the open house for the water pollution control facility, which is the one, I think we've talked about that before,
yes.
Just to the east of town at it's on 280th Street.
Mm-hmm.
So that facility does not open up to the public very often, so it's kind of unusual. They've had a lot of upgrades. I always think about it as a newer facility, but I think somebody told me the other day it's 29. It's been around for a while, almost three mm-hmm. decades. But they opened that up, let people tour it.
Wow.
And some of the scout groups, I believe Girl Scouts, have a badge that they can get by doing the tour. So that's always exciting. So the Ames Water Pollution Control Facility is east of Interstate 35 on 280th Street. A little bit difficult to find, but you can see it from the interstate. And we will have a lot of displays, exhibits, information out there so people can understand what the facility does and what role it plays.
A glimpse into the infrastructure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always a good
one. When is that?
That is, sorry, I didn't even say that, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, April 23rd. So if you like educational, entertaining events, you'll want to go to the Eco Fair tomorrow, followed up by the Water Pollution Control Facility open house on Saturday, April 23rd.
And will people from the city or from the people that manage the plant, will they be there too?
Absolutely. We'll have.
So you can see the people
you
who
can
manage.
Ask questions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very interesting to see the different facilities the city operates, the infrastructure that it takes to run a city, and, you know, what happens to your water when you run your garbage disposal or flush the toilet.
Right.
That's where it goes.
Right. It's a timely subject because there has been concern about water safety in other communities.
Absolutely.
And so this can kind of help us appreciate ours, I guess.
Yes.
Could I interject a question here? Is it better for the water supply? I don't run my disposal usually. I compost everything in my...
My advice to you is that's exactly the way you should do it, only because it's not a question of better or worse for the water quality. It's really about the fats, oils, and greases that could end up clogging your service line.
Mm-hmm.
So we suggest that you scrape plates off into the garbage or compost. I know there's different things you can and cannot compost, but using your garbage disposal as less as possible is better for your pipes.
Huh.
So we can process the organic material in the disposal, but what we do see is clogs caused by fats, oils, and greases when people run their garbage disposal from like animal product or other things that can get clogged in there. And most of those service line backups are the homeowners' responsibility. So you just really don't want to do it. Run your garbage disposal as least as possible, and composting is a great option. So some other things we have coming up, looking ahead even into May, as I was mentioning, the Furman Aquatic Center, as I drive past it, that will be opening up on Memorial Day weekend this year, which is May 28th. And we are still offering discounts if you buy a season pass. We've been doing this offer for sort of a season pass sale. We've been doing it really since the facility opened. If you renew your summer season pass, so if you had one before and you renew it by May 1st, so it's coming up May 1st, you can receive a 15% discount. And if you're a brand new person to Furman Aquatic Center and you think you might enjoy that this summer, you get a 10% discount. We like to reward those people who have been with us for a long time with the 15% discount. And then we like to encourage others to join us with the 10%. You know, it doesn't take that many visits to the Furman Aquatic Center to make that season pass pay for itself.
Mm-hmm.
It is a great summer activity for an individual user who likes to lap swim, for a family, for somebody who just wants to exercise and enjoy being outside. I look forward
and
every year.
The lazy river is very popular.
Isn't
that awesome?
People
like to walk in the opposite direction. That's very good exercise.
Walking in the opposite direction, I found, was more than I could do.
So well, especially on the corners if you go close.
Yeah, I ended up just walking with the current. It was really hard. I thought of myself as a pretty solid walker, but I'm telling you, walking against the current was really hard. So, yeah, but it is really a great opportunity. If you've never been there, I certainly encourage you to go out to Furman this summer and take advantage of those discounts. Again, you only have until May 1st. We have some other events in April. We participate in Stash the Trash. I hope people are familiar with that option. Our resource recovery plant, which is the processor of garbage in Ames, it will take all that garbage that's collected at Stash the Trash. That's April 30th. That is also Saturday, and that is facilitated through the Volunteer Center of Story County. That's where you go and sign up, and I'm sure you're familiar with the model. You get into groups or individuals, and you pick an area of the community. I have to say that at this time of the year, I don't think our city looks its best. You can sort of see what the snow melt has left behind, and this is a great chance to give back to the community by going out, picking an area, and cleaning up. They recover, you know, tons, well, probably not literally tons, but a lot of garbage, maybe tons, and that garbage is then disposed of properly all over the community. Every time this event happens, I truly can see a difference the next day. We've had some rainy days in the past for Stash the Trash. We always hope for great weather, but you just never know. You got to be prepared to get out there in any kind of weather. And I'm just so appreciative of the volunteers to do it. It's an all-volunteer event. And
probably a little bit of fun, too, to do it.
You know, they start at, people start at Ryman Gardens. You sign up at the Volunteer Center for Story County website. It looks like it's vcstory.org. Mm-hmm. Sign up for a time slot. And then participants meet at Ryman Gardens. They check in. They get gloves and trash bags. And then they go to their sites. There's like a luncheon that they offer for the volunteers. It's really a fun kind of event. I know that I've just kind of picked a section. Even if you don't sign up, you can just pick a section of your neighborhood and clean it up mm-hmm. and feel that you're participating. The check-in is good because we know where people are, and we can sometimes people who are assigned to public spaces find tires or something very large and they need assistance. Mm-hmm. So by checking in, that kind of information can be relayed. But really a great event. It's been with us for several years. I think it grows every year. And I think it's truly one of those events that makes a difference in the community mm-hmm. and certainly worth people's time.
So Ames is cleaning up its room.
Yes. Absolutely. Spring cleaning. Another event that the City of Ames is participating in, but is actually being hosted by Healthiest Ames. And as I drove down Main Street today, I saw the banner for Healthiest mm-hmm. for Open Streets. Healthiest Ames is organizing that event from 1 to 4 p.m. on Sunday, April 24th, the day after our open house at Water Pollution Control Facility. You could just mark all sorts of things on your April calendar with everything that's going on. But Open Streets is about getting people out and moving. We encourage people to bike or walk to the event. It's held on Main Street. People talk about how it's really kind of stretched out, but that's deliberate. It's to get you to move. Our Ames Parks and Recreation Department will have several games and things for people to do. I know Lynn Carey was just here. The library typically participates. I hope that they are again this year. But Parks and Rec also offers things like aerobics classes. You can do Zumba. You can do yoga, cardio dance. We'll talk about bike safety. And so that's another reason why you might want to ride your bike down there. They'll have a protected bike lane so that you can sort of understand how you should ride in a protected bike lane. And talk about multimodal transportation, which is always kind of a mouthful. So another great event. Obviously, we have our council meetings that we always do, the second and fourth Tuesday of every month. And we have a special council workshop this month on Tuesday, April 19th. It is the Lincoln Way Corridor Plan Study, and mm-hmm. I know we've talked about yeah. that. This is kind of one of those check-in points. Mm-hmm. So they are consultants from Housel Levine will be back in Ames on Tuesday, April 19th. This is an event. It's a workshop. It's a public meeting. We invite all citizens to attend. And it really will say it's an analysis of the research to date. So we've talked about the online survey. And it will look at the Lincoln Way corridor from east to west. It goes completely through Ames. That is a lot of road. So this workshop will work on narrowing the focus down to just a few areas. I think mm-hmm. they've said 5 to 7 focal point areas where they're going to look at for the potential for redevelopment, for maybe mm-hmm. housing infill, for improvements, mm-hmm. whatever
so,
that looks like.
As I learned last time we were talking about this, this isn't really literally about improving the road itself.
No.
It's about looking at what's happening along the road and the properties and how the city can interact with the development of the areas along the road.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's – yeah, that's exactly – it's mm-hmm. a block to 3 blocks off in north or south of the Lincoln Way corridor. And then at the same time, Iowa State, in partnership with the City of Ames, is looking at safety in a specified area in that part of Lincoln Way that kind of cuts through campus town, University Boulevard to Sheldon. Mm-hmm. They are also doing a concurrent study, which I know is confusing. They are also doing an online survey that is specifically asking pedestrians, bikers, drivers about safety. And so the way to understand the difference of those studies, the Lincoln Way safety study is one study. The Lincoln Way corridor plan is the second study. Mm-hmm. Both are asking for public opinions on what residents would like to see in Lincoln, in and along Lincoln Way.
One of the most noticeable things right now is this large student housing that's going up right as you enter into Campus Town next to the new fraternity building.
I have heard so many people talk about that in a way that it's just people have been intrigued by the way that that building is changing the skyline.
Totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it started with that fraternity being torn down. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of saw this almost kind of Disneyland type of building taking shape, kind of a castle mm-hmm. being built, which was interesting because you had, you know, one of these buildings that looked pretty old being built new. And then all of a sudden now this new building came next to it, which is very, very different, you know.
Yeah, you know, it really to me is the cue into the driver. You're entering a more urban kind of area where you're seeing a lot more density and height in the buildings. And hey, you're in Campus Town.
That's become the character of Campus Town.
Yep.
Yeah. There's also another building on Stanton or between Stanton and
Chamberlain.
And Chamberlain. Mm-hmm. There's also a large building going up there that has that same feeling to it.
Yeah, the height and that density. And that was a deliberate plan to kind of consolidate. There's a limited amount of space. Location in that area is very important. And so really the only option is to go up.
Right.
And for the longest time, the Legacy Tower was the lone high building there. And I think it definitely balances the area out to see more height mm-hmm. in the buildings. But it's different. And for people who've lived in Ames or who have come back, it's just interesting to see that height and that intensification there.
Yeah. It's not Dogtown anymore.
No. It's very different. So progress. You know, everything mm-hmm. looks different. And it's funny that you say that. I just want to, again, thank members of the City of Ames Boards and Commissions. We had an appreciation luncheon for them yesterday. It's our annual way of saying thank you for serving on a City of Ames Board or Commission. Mm-hmm. And our guest speaker was Warren Madden, who reflected on his 50 years of service to Iowa State and talked about Ames as a community. And basically, what I took away from his message is that Ames is not the city that it was 50 years ago, and Ames is a better city. And we've grown and we've shown progress, and we're going to work. If we continue to work together, we will continue to be successful in the future.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any last words?
No, Susan? That was great.
Okay,
I feel like we talked a lot.
That's a high note to end on. And this has been Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been speaking with Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. And earlier we spoke with Jamie Gurganis, parent coordinator and with Heartland Area Education Agency. We also spoke with Fazira Nuran from the Malaysian Students Association and Lynn Carey from the Ames Public Library. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. This show will air again at noon and 7 p.m. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. So if you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or come to 410 Douglas in Ames, downtown Ames. So if you enjoyed this show, please tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. You can also listen to this show and all our past Local Talk shows online at khoifm.org. You'll find today's show on the homepage as soon as Ron Carson is able to post it. Ron Carson is our webmaster. Thank you, Ron. KHOI is streaming live on khoifm.org, where you can also find archives of all of our shows. Tune in again on Monday for Local Talk, when Greta Anderson will be speaking about the Brookhaven Collider, which now has ties to Iowa State University. And stay tuned now for Morning Masterpieces with Tom Beal. Please remember that you as listener are the most important part of Local Talk. Thank you for joining us today. Your participation as audience and your generous donations make it all possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.